Certificate in ESOL, Examination C2. Section 1, Listening. I am going to give you the instructions for this part of the test. You will hear this sound at the start of each piece. Remember to transfer your answers to the optical mark form before the end of the exam. Now open your question paper and look at Part 1, Section A. Listening Part 1, Section A. Listen to the first section of a radio program in which a radio presenter talks to Sarah White about women in sport. For questions 1 to 5, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. You will hear Section A twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section A. Part 1, Section A.
Welcome to this week's programme. I'm George Peters and today we'll be talking about women in sport with Sarah White, who is the Chief Executive of the UK Women's Fitness and Sport Association. Sarah, it's great to have you here with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sarah, it seems to me that when I turn on the TV, 9 times out of 10, or even more, it's men's sport that I see. And it's also usually men watching sport too. Is it inevitable then that sport is a male domain?
I don't believe so. And it isn't in other countries. So we know that this isn't a natural state of affairs. This is a culture that's quite specific to the UK, actually. We know that only 5% of all media coverage of sport shows women playing sport.
I'm intrigued by the idea that the UK has a peculiarly masculine sports culture. If we wanted to see a more feminine sports culture, where should we look?
Well, as is often the case, the Scandinavian countries are leading the field, along with countries such as Australia and New Zealand. You see, the mentality towards sport appears to be different in those places. I mean, it's not just that sport includes women, but that the activities that constitute what sport is include running and aerobics. In fact, anything that's about being active is considered sport for them. Whereas in this country, our concept of sports seems to be related to highly competitive team sports and, most obviously, football.
Ah, yes. But isn't that one of the areas where women seem to be participating a lot more than they were in the past? I mean, hasn't there been quite an expansion of girls' and women's football in this country?
Okay, it is the fastest growing sport, with more and more women taking part. But still, only 1% of women play football, compared to 13% of men, and we rarely encounter female football in the media.
Only 1%? I'd have thought it would be higher than that.
I think if girls are encouraged, if they're given the chance, they'll play. Hopefully that's a trend we're going to see, and that's what we should be doing across the board. Offering girls and women the same opportunities in sport, whether amateur or professional. That also means ensuring that there is media coverage of it too.
Are there any areas of the British media where there has been some genuine innovation in the current coverage of women's sport?
In terms of the mainstream media, I'm not sure that there's been a radical shift. We measure media coverage of women's sport year on year, and it's definitely diminished over the last year.
Really? OK, and what about non-traditional media? Is there any room in that area for women's sport?
Yes. I mean, there are some interesting developments. For example, a new online magazine called Women in Sport Action that's aimed exclusively at the women's market. It's for women who enjoy either playing or watching sport, and it also carries brands of sports clothing and so on. But we have to remember this type of thing is the exception rather than the rule. Female sport is largely out of the spotlight.
Sarah, what is the gender breakdown of the leadership of sports organisations in this country?
Well, this is one of the reasons that female sports coverage is so insufficient in the media. Out of hundreds of sports organisations, there are only four governing bodies that have a female chief executive or board member. We need better female representation and focus at every level, not just on the field, in order to encourage change.
Thanks for that insight into female sport, Sarah, and I'm sure you'll want to stay with us when I talk to Dr. Myers after the break.
Now listen again.
Welcome to this week's programme. I'm George Peters, and today we'll be talking about women in sport with Sarah White, who is the chief executive of the UK Women's Fitness and Sport Association. Sarah, it's great to have you here with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sarah, it seems to me that when I turn on the TV, 9 times out of 10, or even more, it's men's sport that I see. And it's also usually men watching sport too. Is it inevitable then that sport is a male domain?
I don't believe so. And it isn't in other countries. So we know that this isn't a natural state of affairs. This is a culture that's quite specific to the UK, actually. We know that only 5% of all media coverage of sport shows women playing sport.
I'm intrigued by the idea that the UK has a peculiarly masculine sports culture. If we wanted to see a more feminine sports culture, where should we look?
Well, as is often the case, the Scandinavian countries are leading the field, along with countries such as Australia and New Zealand. You see, the mentality towards sport appears to be different in those places. I mean, it's not just that sport includes women, but that the activities that constitute what sport is include running and aerobics. In fact, anything that's about being active is considered sport for them. Whereas in this country, our concept of sports seems to be related to highly competitive team sports and, most obviously, football.
Ah, yes. But isn't that one of the areas where women seem to be participating a lot more than they were in the past? I mean, hasn't there been quite an expansion of girls and women's football in this country?
OK, it is the fastest growing sport, with more and more women taking part. But still, only 1% of women play football, compared to 13% of men. And we rarely encounter female football in the media.
Only 1%? I'd have thought it would be higher than that.
I think if girls are encouraged, if they're given the chance, they'll play. Hopefully that's a trend we're going to see. And that's what we should be doing across the board. Offering girls and women the same opportunities in sport, whether amateur or professional. That also means ensuring that there is media coverage of it too.
Are there any areas of the British media where there has been some genuine innovation in the current coverage of women's sport?
In terms of the mainstream media, I'm not sure that there's been a radical shift. We measure media coverage of women's sport year on year, and it's definitely diminished over the last year.
Really? OK, and what about non-traditional media? Is there any room in that area for women's sport?
Yes. I mean, there are some interesting developments. For example, a new online magazine called Women in Sport Action that's aimed exclusively at the women's market. It's for women who enjoy either playing or watching sport, and it also carries brands of sports clothing and so on. But we have to remember this type of thing is the exception rather than the rule. Female sport is largely out of the spotlight.
Sarah, what is the gender breakdown of the leadership of sports organisations in this country?
Well, this is one of the reasons that female sports coverage is so insufficient in the media. Out of hundreds of sports organisations, there are only 4 governing bodies that have a female chief executive or board member. We need better female representation and focus at every level, not just on the field, in order to encourage change.
Thanks for that insight into female sport, Sarah, and I'm sure you'll want to stay with us when I talk to Dr. Myers after the break.
That is the end of Part 1, Section A of the listening test. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Listening Part 1, Section B. Listen to the second section of the radio programme in which the presenter talks to Dr. Joanna Myers about women in sport. For questions 6 to 10, choose the correct answer, A, B or C. You will hear Section B twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section B.
Joining me now is Dr. Joanna Myers, a specialist in gender studies with a particular interest in sport and gender. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Myers. So, Sarah White has just been commenting on media coverage of female sport. Let me ask you, what do you understand to be the principal differences between male and female sport?
Well, firstly, let me start by saying there is a very different profile of the top 10 activities that women and men do. For men, 6 out of those 10 are sports, or at least what most people would recognise as sports, whereas there are only 2 for women, and those 2 are tennis and badminton. So the top activities for women, swimming, running, aerobics, and going to the gym are not team sports. Therefore, what we can conclude is women tend to prefer to exercise as opposed to doing sport. Actually, in truth, only 3% of all women take part in any team-based sport. A second point is that the motivation for playing differs. So for women, it is for health and fitness reasons, rather than socialising or pleasure, which seems such a dreadful shame to me. I think it's all linked into diet cultures that women are part of, and as a result, you've got half the population who are basically doing sport in a very different way.
Why is it that women are not attracted by the playful side of sport? The kind of sheer pointlessness, actually, of most sports, the idea that we do them not for any particular reason, but just because they're fun.
Well, I think that women would do and are doing more team-based sport for fun. In fact, the research bears that out. There are many more mixed leagues too. Nowadays, women and men are happy to play sport together, and they often do it after work or in the lunch break, so that side of things is growing. I think maybe the problem stems from the fact that at school, everything was about team sport and competition, so you had to be good at it. So those that were good, usually men, obviously did well, and perhaps have gone on to do sport in their adult lives.
Yes, but surely you could make the same argument for women, couldn't you?
To a far, far lesser extent. You see, you have to look at the gender differences more broadly, and I think there are a whole host of things around self-image and body image. We just have to recognise that culturally, girls are raised in a completely different environment, with this huge emphasis on appearance and conforming to a beauty ideal. So girls inevitably care about what they look like. Therefore, there are deeper differences here in terms of the desire to be competitive and a willingness to take part in rough sports.
You've talked about the role of school sports culture in discouraging many girls from participating, and you've touched on the wider question of body image in our society. But what do you see as the way forward?
A difficult question. I think we have to recognise that the cultural barrier sets in at a very young age, and in many ways, it is quite damaging for women's continuing involvement in sport. We need to look at the range of activities available and recognise that there are so many sports that aren't gendered. For example, table tennis. Let's promote sports that aren't associated with a particular gender and make both males and females see that sport doesn't necessarily need to be related to either fitness or competition, but just for fun or to socialise.
Yes, but the real question is by what means can all these issues be resolved? I would imagine schools are one of the easier points of intervention for anyone who wants to campaign on this.
Possibly as a starting point, but we need deeper intervention than that. We've got all sorts of informal and formal sports organisations in this country, athletics clubs, football leagues, and their aim should be to attract an equal number of both genders into their sport. Changing the way they approach their sport could make it attractive to everybody. Of course, that's just the beginning. Next, we have to deal with the attitude. Now listen again.
Joining me now is Dr. Joanna Myers, a specialist in gender studies with a particular interest in sport and gender. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Myers. So, Sarah White has just been commenting on media coverage of female sport. Let me ask you, what do you understand to be the principal differences between male and female sport?
Well, firstly, let me start by saying there is a very different profile of the top 10 activities that women and men do. For men, 6 out of those 10 are sports, or at least what most people would recognise as sports, whereas there are only 2 for women, and those 2 are tennis and badminton. So the top activities for women, swimming, running, aerobics, and going to the gym, are not team sports. Therefore, what we can conclude is women tend to prefer to exercise as opposed to doing sport. Actually, in truth, only 3% of all women take part in any team-based sport. A second point is that the motivation for playing differs. So for women, it is for health and fitness reasons, rather than socialising or pleasure, which seems such a dreadful shame to me. I think it's all linked into diet cultures that women are part of, and as a result, you've got half the population who are basically doing sport in a very different way.
Why is it that women are not attracted by the playful side of sport? The kind of sheer pointlessness, actually, of most sports, the idea that we do them not for any particular reason, but just because they're fun.
Well, I think that women would do, and are doing, more team-based sport for fun. In fact, the research bears that out. There are many more mixed leagues too. Nowadays, women and men are happy to play sport together, and they often do it after work or in the lunch break, so that side of things is growing. I think maybe the problem stems from the fact that at school, everything was about team sport and competition, so you had to be good at it. So those that were good, usually men, obviously did well, and perhaps have gone on to do sport in their adult lives.
Yes, but surely you could make the same argument for women, couldn't you?
To a far, far lesser extent. You see, you have to look at the gender differences more broadly, and I think there are a whole host of things around self-image and body image. We just have to recognise that culturally, girls are raised in a completely different environment, with this huge emphasis on appearance and conforming to a beauty ideal. So girls inevitably care about what they look like. Therefore, there are deeper differences here in terms of the desire to be competitive and a willingness to take part in rough sports.
You've talked about the role of school sports culture in discouraging many girls from participating, and you've touched on the wider question of body image in our society. But what do you see as the way forward?
Difficult question. I think we have to recognise that the cultural barrier sets in at a very young age, and in many ways, it is quite damaging for women's continuing involvement in sport. We need to look at the range of activities available and recognise that there are so many sports that aren't gendered. For example, table tennis. Let's promote sports that aren't associated with a particular gender and make both males and females see that sport doesn't necessarily need to be related to either fitness or competition, but just for fun or to socialise.
Yes, but the real question is, by what means can all these issues be resolved? I would imagine schools are one of the easier points of intervention for anyone who wants to campaign on this.
Possibly as a starting point, but we need deeper intervention than that. We've got all sorts of informal and formal sports organisations in this country, athletics clubs, football leagues, and their aim should be to attract an equal number of both genders into their sport. Changing the way they approach their sport could make it attractive to everybody. Of course, that's just the beginning. Next, we have to deal with the attitude. That is the end of Part 1, Section B of the listening test. Now turn to Part 2. Listening Part 2. Listen to three conversations, and for questions 11 to 20, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation twice. You have 2 minutes to read the questions for Part 2. Conversation 1. Hi, Andy. You're early. You must be really eager to discuss this presentation.
I know. I'm really worried about it, actually. I've never done a group presentation before. I haven't got a clue about how we should organise the work in terms of preparation. I mean separating out the research areas and then actually delivering the content of the presentation.
Don't worry. It's pretty straightforward. Each group member must be part of the preparation process and also has to present as well. How you actually do that is something you need to arrange amongst yourselves.
So, for example, we could divide the presentation up into three different areas and each presenter could research that area, then present it.
You could run into some issues with that type of approach. You may find that your topic areas overlap between the different group members. You'll end up talking about the same things, repeating yourselves, and the audience will be bored stiff. You'll lose their interest.
OK, I see what you mean.
I'd think carefully about the changeover between each presenter. If each person is talking about something different, the overall presentation may come across as fragmented. It needs to be coherent, so you must make sure that you link the ideas you're discussing very clearly between presenters.
OK, I'll pass that information on to the others. What about the post-presentation report? I know we're doing that individually, but does that mean we get two different marks? One for the presentation and one for the report? Some students are saying it's one mark and others are saying two.
Good question. I should really have mentioned this in class. We used to give a mark for the whole thing, the presentation and the report together. And I think it may still say that in the course handbook, but it needs updating. After feedback from last year's students, we decided to award a separate grade for each part.
That's great. Thanks for your help. Before I go, can I just ask about a couple of things that we were talking about?
Now listen again. Hi, Andy. You're early. You must be really eager to discuss this presentation.
I know. I'm really worried about it, actually. I've never done a group presentation before. I haven't got a clue about how we should organise the work in terms of preparation. I mean separating out the research areas and then actually delivering the content of the presentation.
Don't worry. It's pretty straightforward. Each group member must be part of the preparation process and also has to present as well. How you actually do that is something you need to arrange amongst yourselves.
So, for example, we could divide the presentation up into three different areas and each presenter could research that area, then present it.
You could run into some issues with that type of approach. You may find that your topic areas overlap between the different group members. You'll end up talking about the same things, repeating yourselves, and the audience will be bored stiff. You'll lose their interest.
OK. I see what you mean.
I'd think carefully about the changeover between each presenter. If each person is talking about something different, the overall presentation may come across as fragmented. It needs to be coherent, so you must make sure that you link the ideas you're discussing very clearly between presenters.
OK, I'll pass that information on to the others. What about the post-presentation report? I know we're doing that individually, but does that mean we get two different marks? One for the presentation and one for the report? Some students are saying it's one mark and others are saying two.
Good question. I should really have mentioned this in class. We used to give a mark for the whole thing, the presentation and the report together. And I think it may still say that in the course handbook, but it needs updating. After feedback from last year's students, we decided to award a separate grade for each part.
That's great. Thanks for your help. Before I go, can I just ask about a couple of things that we were talking about?
Conversation 2.
Good morning. Is this the Better Price Insurance office?
Yes, good morning. How can I help?
I'm interested in some travel insurance, particularly for my luggage.
That's fine. I just need some information. Where are you going, and for how long?
I'm going to India and Nepal for around 2 months. We students have long summer holidays, you know.
Lucky you. I need a rough idea of the value of any goods you'll be travelling with.
Well, unlike most students, I won't be travelling light with just a rucksack. I'm taking all sorts of stuff. Let me see. I've got some mountaineering gear. That's quite costly. Then I've got my video camera. I'm really into making films, you know. What else? I've got my tablet. Actually, I probably won't bother with that. After all, I'm taking my smartphone. That's it, I think. Aside from the usual clothes and travelling gear. If there are some other random bits and bobs, they won't be worth much.
That's fine. And what level of insurance cover do you require?
I don't know. You'd better talk me through the options.
Well, Gold policy covers your contents to the value of £10,000, silver to £5,000, and bronze to £500.
It's not really worthwhile getting the bronze given the value of the contents, is it? How much do the other two cost?
It's £200 for gold or £100 for silver.
Blimey, I wasn't expecting it to be that much. I suppose I'd better go with the silver cover then. Is that it, then? Can you organise the documents today?
Well, I can, but I'm just wondering if you want additional cover. I mean, you only have cover for the contents of your luggage, and given the nature of the trip you're taking, I'm thinking, what about cover for delayed or cancelled flights? Then there's personal accident or injury, too.
You're putting me off going. Look, haven't you got some kind of cover that includes everything? Rather than individual cover for each potential disaster?
Yes, of course. We've got fully comprehensive gold, silver and bronze. But obviously the price will be slightly higher.
Obviously. I'll be bankrupt at this rate.
Don't worry. If you've got your student ID, I'm sure we can give you a discounted rate.
Excellent. Tell me more.
Now listen again.
Good morning. Is this the Better Price Insurance office?
Yes, good morning. How can I help?
I'm interested in some travel insurance, particularly for my luggage.
That's fine. I just need some information. Where are you going, and for how long?
I'm going to India and Nepal for around 2 months. We students have long summer holidays, you know.
Lucky you. I need a rough idea of the value of any goods you'll be travelling with.
Well, unlike most students, I won't be travelling light with just a rucksack. I'm taking all sorts of stuff. Let me see. I've got some mountaineering gear. That's quite costly. Then I've got my video camera. I'm really into making films, you know. What else? I've got my tablet. Actually, I probably won't bother with that. After all, I'm taking my smartphone. That's it, I think. Aside from the usual clothes and travelling gear. If there are some other random bits and bobs, they won't be worth much.
That's fine. And what level of insurance cover do you require?
I don't know. You'd better talk me through the options.
Well, Gold policy covers your contents to the value of £10,000. Silver to £5,000 and bronze to £500.
It's not really worthwhile getting the bronze given the value of the contents, is it? How much do the other two cost?
It's £200 for gold or £100 for silver.
Blimey, I wasn't expecting it to be that much. I suppose I'd better go with the silver cover then. Is that it then? Can you organise the documents today?
Well, I can, but I'm just wondering if you want additional cover. I mean, you only have cover for the contents of your luggage, and given the nature of the trip you're taking, I'm thinking, what about cover for delayed or cancelled flights? Then there's personal accident or injury, too.
You're putting me off going. Look, haven't you got some kind of cover that includes everything? Rather than individual cover for each potential disaster?
Yes, of course. We've got fully comprehensive gold, silver and bronze. But obviously the price will be slightly higher.
Obviously. I'll be bankrupt at this rate.
Don't worry. If you've got your student ID, I'm sure we can give you a discounted rate.
Excellent. Tell me more.
Conversation 3.
Hi, Kathy. Haven't seen you for ages. Where have you been hiding?
Hi, Martin. Great to see you. I've moved. I'm living in the city now.
Seriously? I didn't know. What are you doing back in the village then? Now you've got the delights of the big city to entertain you.
Hey, the city's not all it's cracked up to be, you know. It's nice to be back here, even if it's only for a day.
Why is that then?
Well, the thing is, I thought I'd meet loads of new people. And I have. But you never get to know them because everybody seems to be rushing around like headless chickens all the time. You'd imagine it'd be so simple to make friends. But in reality, it's hard to build a rapport with anybody. Obviously, I've got my husband, Ben, there with me. In fact, it's down to him that we moved there in the first place. I'd like to have other buddies too.
And to think I used to complain about everybody round here living in each other's pockets. I certainly won't take it for granted anymore. You probably need to find situations where people are more relaxed and have time on their hands. Then you might actually have an opportunity to get to know them.
I suppose you're referring to joining clubs or classes or something like that, aren't you?
Well, that's what I do.
Yes, I've tried that, and I didn't have much luck. Maybe it's me. I think I'm too reserved. Anyhow, the job and flat and everything else have worked out, so I'll stick with it for the time being.
Yep, don't make any rash decisions. Have you got time for a coffee? I want to pump you for information about working in the city. I'm after a new job, you know.
Of course I've got time. Shall we go to that place on the corner? Now listen again.
Hi, Kathy. Haven't seen you for ages. Where have you been hiding?
Hi, Martin. Great to see you. I've moved. I'm living in the city now.
Seriously? I didn't know. What are you doing back in the village then? Now you've got the delights of the big city to entertain you.
Hey, the city's not all it's cracked up to be, you know. It's nice to be back here, even if it's only for a day.
Why is that then?
Well, the thing is, I thought I'd meet loads of new people. And I have. But you never get to know them because everybody seems to be rushing around like headless chickens all the time. You'd imagine it'd be so simple to make friends. But in reality, it's hard to build a rapport with anybody. Obviously, I've got my husband, Ben, there with me. In fact, it's down to him that we moved there in the first place. I'd like to have other buddies too.
And to think I used to complain about everybody round here living in each other's pockets. I certainly won't take it for granted anymore. You probably need to find situations where people are more relaxed and have time on their hands. Then you might actually have an opportunity to get to know them.
I suppose you're referring to joining clubs or classes or something like that, aren't you?
Well, that's what I do.
Yes, I've tried that, and I didn't have much luck. Maybe it's me. I think I'm too reserved. Anyhow, the job and flat and everything else have worked out, so I'll stick with it for the time being.
Yep, don't make any rash decisions. Have you got time for a coffee? I want to pump you for information about working in the city. I'm after a new job, you know.
Of course I've got time. Shall we go to that place on the corner? That is the end of the listening test.